afternoon, everybody. I'd like to welcome you to the Health Care Committee. And it is February 21st, and I would like to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 558 and would like to call Senator Arne Roblin and Senator Jeff Cruz to the dais.
Yeah.
You come? Okay, Jeff.
Well, actually, to the panel.
I guess I should put you to my right. Okay. I'll do that just for you, Jeff.
I'll sit next to
you. That's good. Perfect.
And Oliver, do you want to just briefly describe the bill before we get started?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the measure provides the Oregon Health Plan, would provide the Oregon Health Plan to all children in Oregon, and will also allow the Oregon Health Authority and the Department of Consumer and Business Affairs to request federal approval to receive additional funding if applicable, declares emergency, effective on passage. There are no amendments.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee. For the record, Arne Roblin. I am from Senate District 5, which is the Oregon coast, and a little bit less, but most of the Oregon coast. I'm here because this is a bill, 558, that is really, really important to me. As a high school principal, part of what you do is try to help every child succeed in our state. And when there is a population of kids who are not covered by insurance, it affects everybody at the school. And as we've learned over the last number of years, chronic absenteeism, all those things are current indicators of kids not finishing high school. So as a school principal in a school district that has 75% on free and reduced price lunch, and I think there's a lot of those rural communities that are like that, we have a lot of kids who by no choice of their own have ended up in our school districts. Their parents have brought them here, they're here, and because of the intricacies of our healthcare system, they are not covered. And from my perspective, that is morally wrong. We need to have young people who are going to school and part of the total population of our schools covered by our health care program so that they have the best chance to succeed in our schools. And over the years, watching when we didn't even have our regular kids covered, we had a lot of illness. And it took me my entire 32-year career at that high school to get a health clinic. And it actually didn't actually happen until 2 or 3 years after I left the high school. So it was 35 years. We got a little bit of health clinics in our schools that helped a lot. But to actually have a really beautiful building that can actually meet all the needs, the health needs of kids, it took us 37 years of work to get there. And I'm proud to say it's there now. But now we need to take that final step and say all of our children are really important, and every one of them needs to be covered. It's like everything else. When you cover all kids, it helps all kids. And if you have kids that are not getting the health care that they need, they miss more school. They also, because school is really important to their families, they come even when they're sick, which exposes other kids. So my feeling is 558 is the right thing to do at the right time to do it. Was in the past, but the right time is now to get that finished up. So thank you for the opportunity to speak to you, and I'd be glad to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Jeff Cruz, Senate District 1, and in all due respect to Arne Roblin, I have a fair chunk of the coast. And
that's true. I know. That's why I was. That's why I let him into that.
And actually, I have the best part of the coast, but we can debate that at a later date. I was given a script and I decided to ignore it, and because quite simply we are tasking the health authority with doing some work and doing some research, and I just wanted to use this as an opportunity to inform them. I agree with what Senator Roblin said. We're talking about 17,000 roughly kids at this point in time who don't have coverage, but I just want the health authority to be aware that we are creating a work group at this point in time, because it's not just getting kids health care, it's also getting them ready. And so we are creating a work group to see if we can Develop a plan for universal screening. I've talked to Senator Roblin about that. You know, we passed a bill out of this committee dealing with vision, but I want a more comprehensive screening for both vision and hearing and dyslexia and autism, because it is a matter of having the kids ready and able to learn when they go to school. And them being healthy is one thing, and us also being sure that if they have any special needs in those areas that we can address, we need to be doing that too. So I'm hoping that this becomes slightly more comprehensive as we move forward.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any questions?
We've heard this bill before.
You have?
Before this committee.
Yes, I know.
Yes. All right. I would like to call Laura Etherington, Courtney Johnson, Dr. Amelka DeSonis, and then John Mullen at the very end.
Okay, I will. Chair Monis Anderson, Vice Chair Cruz, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Courtney Johnston. I'm here today on behalf of the Coalition for a Healthy Oregon, which is an association of coordinated care organizations and affiliated companies that serve nearly half of the state's Medicaid population through the Oregon Health Plan. COHO's mission is to promote the delivery of accessible, high-quality, and cost-effective health care through local, community-based managed care delivery systems. And since its inception, the CCOs, Oregon's community-based model has proven to be successful in keeping quality up and costs down through effective management strategies that focus on prevention and disease management to improve outcomes for our patients. Unfortunately, when there are members of our communities who cannot qualify for health coverage, CCOs are unable to effectively manage and coordinate their care. We cannot spend our resources on prevention strategies like helping people get to their doctor's appointments and take their medication, or connecting people with prevention programs like hearing or behavioral health screenings, as Senator Cruz mentioned. Instead, the state ends up spending that money on what could otherwise be avoidable emergency room visits, which contributes to the rising cost within our healthcare delivery system. COHO believes that it is incompatible with Oregon's transformed healthcare system. We know that early intervention prevents costly long-term complications, and we are here today to support Senate Bill 558, because improving access to care for more Oregonians is a positive step in continuing to meet Oregon's triple aim. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, everybody. Chair Monis Anderson, Vice Chair Cruz, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Imelda DeConis. I am an internist by practice. I am also the CEO and president of Northwest Permanente. We are the largest independent physician-led multi-specialty care organization of its kind in Oregon. Together, we contract with Kaiser Foundation Health Plan and hospitals to provide care to patients with Kaiser insurance. Also, together with Kaiser in the Northwest, we provide care to over 567,000 members in Oregon as well as Southwest Washington. Kaiser Permanente supports Senate Bill 558. We actually have lived for the last 15 years caring for over 3,300 of these children and their siblings who live in the schools, in the service areas that we serve. And why cover all kids and why now? There is a growing body of research and knowledge, particularly in our 50-plus years of Medicaid, that children with coverage, number one, are healthier adolescents. There has been shown statistically significant reduction in eating disorders, drinking, as well as decreased mortality rates. These kids are also healthier adults. There's been a decrease in as much as 26% in rates of hypertension, decreased hospitalizations, and ER visits. These children also have greater achievements academically, nearly 10% reduction in high school dropout rates, nearly increase of 6% in college graduation rates. Lastly, kids with coverage grow up with greater economic success. And frankly, most surpass their family's economic status. And they do become productive, more productive citizens and pay taxes, frankly. Thank you for this opportunity. And we respectfully request that you move this to the Ways and Means. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Let's go with Laura and then.
Okay. Good afternoon, Chair Mona Sanderson, Vice Chair Cruz, and members of the committee. My name is Laura Etherton with the Oregon Primary Care Association, OPCA, and we also are urging your support for Senate Bill 558. To cover all kids. A little bit about OPCA. We're a nonprofit organization with the mission to support Oregon's federally qualified health centers, also known as community health centers, in their mission to transform primary care to achieve health equity for all. Community health centers deliver integrated primary care to over 400,000 Oregonians across the state, and about one-third of those are children. Community health centers serve many uninsured people across the state, but also serve many patients who have Medicaid coverage. About community health centers are part of CCOs across the state, and about 60% of patients have coverage through the Oregon Health Plan. So right now, community health centers provide a lot of care to the very children that this bill would help. And doing so is a part of the core mission of community health centers, to serve everyone, regardless of ability to pay, insurance status, et cetera. Health centers are really just one part of the system. We've heard from two other really important parts of the system, and we'll continue to later today. Being able to be part of a CCO and having that core coordination component, being able to access specialty care, hospital services, all important parts of the health system that right now, if someone doesn't have insurance, it's really tough to get those services without seeing a lot of out-of-pocket costs that are just unaffordable. Coverage would allow these children to have this good, healthy start in life and be able to see the full range of services. And we also know that once children have coverage, what we've seen is they're more likely, and their parents are more likely to seek the primary care as well to keep kids healthier in the first place. I think that's... those reasons and more are part of why the Oregon Primary Care Association and community health centers across the state are strong supporters of covering all kids in Oregon and urge your support for this bill. Thank you.
Questions for the panel? I want everyone to know that Dr. DeConis is new to Oregon.
No, I've been here since 1999.
Okay, yes. But you're new to...
So my role as the CEO and president, I've been in this role since October 1st, 2015.
Okay.
But I've been with Northwest Permanente for close to 18 years now.
Great. Well, you haven't come before us, or maybe you have, and we welcome you here. And, of course, I know Ms. Johnson and Ms. Etherington quite well. Thank you very much. There's no questions. The only other person signed up to testify is John Mullins.
This bill is to extend the health plan to children from 200% of poverty to 300%.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, John Mullen with the Oregon Law Center. Members of the committee are aware of the mission of the Oregon Law Center, which is to achieve justice for Oregon's low-income communities. We've been involved, the Oregon Law Center has been involved with health issues going back to days before the Oregon Health Plan, through the creation of the Oregon Health Plan, Medicaid expansion, healthcare transformation. We've been involved every step of the way. Most of our clients that we serve are low-income people and on the Oregon Health Plan. We participated in helping to form the Inclusion Affordability Innovation Coalition, where we looked at a number of the gaps that we have in services. And one key area that we agreed on as we worked on the Mend the Gap report, which I think all of you have seen, is the issue that we have about covering children and making sure that we cover all of them. And what Senate Bill 558 would do, of course, is to extend the Oregon Health Plan to those below 300% of the federal poverty level. In thinking about Oregon and how the fact we've been such a leader on issues, on health issues for so many years, and Madam Chair, I can't help but remember our days back in Clackamas County way before the days of the Oregon Health Plan and how difficult it was to find services for anybody that was indigent, as we used to say back then. But I do think this is an opportunity where we can make Oregon proud of its efforts. And I think as we think about children, some of the most vulnerable people in our society, passing cover all kids would be really important. The last thing that I will say is that advocates all recognize the difficulty that you all face with balancing the budget. That isn't so much a function of this committee, but we really see Cover All Kids as being an important addition to the budget, and we hope that members, as they think about revenue solutions during the course of this session, will remember Cover All Kids, and we certainly urge the passage of the bill and sending it on to Ways and Means.
Thank you so much, Mr. Mullins. Thank you. All right. All right, no discussion, no comments. It's the intent of the chair to schedule a work session for our next meeting on February 23rd. Senator Cruz.
Yeah, Madam Chair, thank you. Conceptually, this is good. I think when it gets to Ways and Means, they're going to need to do a slow walk on it, quite simply. There's too many unknowns at this point in time in federal funding for us to just jump ahead without knowing where the landing point is. So I'm sure that will fit into their discussion down in Ways and Means.
Thank you very much. With that, we're going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 558 and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 526. Oliver, can you let us know what this bill does? And Patrick Stone, Chris Pettit, and Dr. Sean McAllister, please come forward.
Great. Madam Chair, members of the committee, before you is Senate Bill 526, brought to you by Senators Cruz and Frederick. The measure modifies the current statutory definition of step therapy and would require insurers that use step therapy protocols to adopt new criteria to govern the use of step therapy protocols, including a new override protocol. The bill requires health insurers that offer health benefit plans in Oregon to provide enrollees a summary of an insurer's procedures with respect to obtaining a step therapy override. Would take effect January 1st, 2018. There are no amendments.
Okay, Senator Cruz.
If I could, thank you, Madam Chair. This is one of the issues that I picked up from Senator Bates, who was going to be the sponsor of this bill originally. Senator Bates and I worked on many, many things together over the course of years. And kind of, Madam Chair, where this kind of fits in is, over the course of time, we have defended the ability of mental health drugs to not be confined to formularies. So, and it's all a matter of patient care and allowing a doctor to prescribe to their patient what they think is appropriate for that patient. And I know this is somewhat controversial in some areas, but from my perspective, Madam Chair, it's all a matter of getting the patients the care they need, and I think this is a step in that direction.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Patrick Stone. I'm the Director of State Government Relations for the National Psoriasis Foundation. NPF represents the 8.3 million Americans and 140,000 Oregonians living with psoriatic disease. We're celebrating our 50th anniversary this year, and I'm proud to say it's our 50th year as being a national nonprofit that's headquartered here in Portland, Oregon. I'm here today to testify in support of Senate Bill 526, sponsored by Senator Cruz. Thank you for your leadership on this issue, sir. This piece of legislation addresses patient protections for step therapy, otherwise known as Fail First. Step therapy is a utilization tool that forces patients to fail on 2 to 3 or an up to 4 medications that are preferred on the drug formulary before reaching the medication originally prescribed by their doctor. In some instances, the drug that a patient is asked to fail on is actually more expensive than the originally prescribed medication. And the use of step therapy by insurers is on the rise. In 2005, 27% of insurers were using step therapy. By 2013, that number was up to 67%. We believe it's much higher at this point. And in the psoriatic disease space, our patient community is subjected to step therapy protocols at a very high rate. We know that 48% of those living with psoriatic disease are denied approval of a medication initially due to step therapy protocols. The legislation before you today addresses step therapy in a fair and balanced approach. We really do believe that. It strikes a balance in by acknowledging that insurers and PBMs need to keep costs down while respecting the fact that the decision of what is the best treatment for a person should remain between a doctor and that patient. This bill is not a ban on step therapy in any means. It provides this by providing that step therapy protocols should be developed using recognized, evidence-based, peer-reviewed clinical data, so the most data, best data out there to set up the protocols, that the process should be a clear and convenient process that is expedited, so 72 hours in most instances and 24 hours in the case of exigent circumstances. And it outlines specific instances based on a medical necessity where a step therapy protocol can be overridden by a doctor. Included in those are that the medication suggested is contraindicated and that the patient is currently stable on the medication prescribed. The example we like to use most often is that if you're stable on, say, a biologic and you switch jobs or the plan year changes, that because you are stable, you should not be submitted to the step therapy protocols again during the new plan year. Currently, even if you have the same insurer, every year in January, you're going to be subjected to the same step therapy protocols when you go to try to get that prescription. In today's age of medicine, particularly in the biologic space, continued drug regimen, adhering to your drug regimen, is very important for efficacy, and it's something we believe strongly in. I should also point out, in relation to generic drugs, that this bill explicitly points out that it does not prohibit an insurer from requiring the use of a generic drug. Additionally, I think it's important to acknowledge the idea of cost associated with the legislation. Opponents are likely to suggest that high costs are associated with this legislation. They'll probably offer a large round number that takes a respectfully short-sighted and siloed approach to the issue. It's our belief that this legislation will actually drive down costs in the long term. Quite simply put, when patients are allowed to access the medication that is best for them, they adhere to the drug regimen at a higher rate, which in turn leads to them being stable and healthier, which in turn leads to fewer drug costs associated with comorbidities, which leads to less doctor visits, which leads to less ER visits, etc. Data from a Georgia Medicaid study justifies this line of thinking. They analyzed the impact of step therapy tools on their patients living with schizophrenia. Among those patients, the policy was associated with a $19.62 per member per month decrease in atypical antipsychotic expenditures and a $2.20 per member per month increase in typical antipsychotic expenditures. They saved money on the drugs that they stepped them through, and they spent more money on the drugs that they put them on. However, among the same patients with schizophrenia, the reduction in drug costs was accompanied by a $31.59 per patient per member increase in expenditures for outpatient services. The drugs didn't work. The people ended up going to the doctor more. They ended up going to the hospital. It costs more money. Overall, it costs the state $13.87 per member per month over an 11-month period. This legislation has passed in six states. Governor Cuomo just recently signed it in New York. It's passed in Illinois, Indiana, Missouri, Kansas in the Medicaid space, and is currently being considered, I think, up to 18 states right now during this biennium are considering the bill. We thank the committee for their time today and their consideration as a member of this legislation, and again, thank Senator Cruz for his leadership. Thank you.
We'll hear the panel and then go for questions.
Hello, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Chris Pettit. I am a local division board member of the National Psoriasis Foundation. I was diagnosed with psoriasis, severe plaque psoriasis, around the age of 12, 13, so right before high school. Like, high school isn't awkward enough to begin with. My body decided to throw some flaky plaques in there. So, you know, since I was diagnosed, you know, I had to deal with the rude comments, the weird questions, you know, just all of that stuff. But fortunately, there have been some major advances in treatments for psoriasis. I started using biologics April of last year. I started Biologic A in April, and that worked for me for about 4 months. So after it stopped up, my dermatologist wasn't satisfied with the results. So it was back to the drawing board. My wife, who also works for the MPF, did some research and found that we found a biologic, we'll call it biologic C, had some really good numbers, good success, good clearing. So I went to my dermatologist and said, I would like to look into this. And so she looked in, she talked to the insurance company, and they said that I needed to try biologic B first. So, which had a not so, it wasn't very successful as, it wasn't as successful as biologic C. So, so I got into a little bit of a, we got into a boxing match with the insurance company, you know, getting that approval, which eventually it did. So I'm actually, I'm on, currently on biologic C and stable health so far. And that's, it's always been my thought has always been that when somebody is sick, the goal is to get better, whatever that may be. And I don't feel that there should be, as an individual, I don't feel that there should be so many detours in getting the medicine that a person needs to get better. And that's why this bill is so important, is because it focuses more on what's best for the patient as an individual, because what works for one person may not work for another person. And it's, well, that's why it's important, because we're all individuals. So yeah, I guess that's all I have to say about that.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for coming and testifying.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Sean McAllister, and I am a rheumatologist practicing in the Portland metropolitan area. This is my first opportunity to come to Salem, so I am grateful for the opportunity to be here. My work centers on diagnosing and managing autoimmune and inflammatory diseases. These diseases can be extraordinarily debilitating, and they can cause deformity and disability. Until recently, we had very few medications which would help people. I was drawn to rheumatology in part by these new discoveries. When I began practicing here nearly 5 years ago, I was dismayed to find the degree of influence that insurance companies had over prescription practices. I spend a lot of time with my patients, and we discuss all the options that are available and the implications of choosing one over another. Shortly after making a decision and starting a prescription, I would often be surprised to receive denials from insurance companies because of step therapy. Often the steps involved had nothing to do with science and did not take the circumstances of the patient into consideration. These denials noted that the patient could appeal, but virtually no one would. Patients dealing with autoimmune diseases are very ill, and it is not fair to expect them to advocate for themselves. I believe it is my responsibility to advocate for them, and at first I was upset by these denials regarding step therapy and wrote some letters that didn't look at the big picture. But I soon realized that angry letters are not in the patient's best interest, and that I was dealing with a highly impersonal bureaucracy. At times, I find myself writing 3 letters in half a day to appeal step therapy decisions. This has become such a burden that we have to hire and maintain a full-time employee to help manage the denials and appeals and the processes that are related to these new medications. So step therapy has created a burden on my practice, which has provided costly delays for patients and created a barrier to the practice of medicine. So, and I would welcome any questions.
Great. Thank you very much. And just for the record, Dr. Senator Steiner Hayward is watching this online. She is ill, but she is watching this. I would like to ask the proponents, and maybe Senator Cruz, whoever can answer it, will you want to have this applied to CCOs, and would you want to stop exempting psych drugs?
Stop exempting psych drugs? Heavens, no.
Okay. Any comments on whether you're interested in having this applied to CCOs?
No, no comment, ma'am. No.
Okay, no comment.
7-Eleven drugs. Have
okay. Been well, that seems to be all the questions. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Betsy Earls, Tom Holt, and Elise Brown. And I know that Tom Holt has to leave, so maybe he can testify first.
I think
so. Chair Monis Anderson, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Tom Holt with Cambia Health Solutions. Appreciate the opportunity to talk to you about Senate Bill 526, which we're opposed to. The bill replaces language that our friend, the late Senator Bates, helped craft just a couple of years ago around this issue, which we think provides more than adequate requirements. We met and exceeded those prior to that bill. And the current law simply requires that carriers make readily available on their to practitioners, you know, information about their formularies and those things that require step therapy. That information is no state secret. We post our medical policies on our public website. You don't have to be a member. You don't have to be a doctor or other prescriber. You can go find it. Those medical policies have great detail of summaries of the studies upon which our decisions are made. It's all based on peer-reviewed evidence. Just to step up a level or two of how we go about determining what a formulary is and why we have step therapy protocols. We build our formularies around, number one, effectiveness based on the clinical evidence in peer-reviewed literature, as well as our own data that supplements that. We look at safety profiles. So if two drugs that have the same indication, but one has more complex side effects than the other, we're very much more likely to put the drug that has fewer side effects on our formulary for preference. And then cost is a tiebreaker. All that is reviewed by a pharmacy and therapeutics committee composed of pharmacists and physicians. In specialty areas, we sometimes bring in practitioners in that specialty to help advise us in building that. Our goal is to make sure that our members get access to treatments that will help them to manage or cure their disease in the most efficient and effective way possible. It is not our goal to prevent people from getting the treatments that they need. We think that the step therapy process, while unfortunate that it has to exist, is very well established. It really exists around two issues. One is beyond the relative effectiveness, differences in safety profiles, but sometimes in costs. You heard just now testimony from a physician who practices in the rheumatology sphere. There are some wonderful treatments in that space. Some of them are amongst the most expensive drugs that we pay for each year per dose, thousands of dollars a month. When there are other, in some cases, there are treatments available that are much less expensive, just as effective, at much lower cost. So we're not creating these hoops just for the jollies of it or just to save dollars. Sometimes the right thing for us to do is to spend more money so that our member can get an effective treatment more and get their disease under control properly. I want to give you one specific example of a trend that we've seen recently. Often, what we're seeing more and more often is combinations of old generic drugs getting a patent as a new branded drug with huge differences in price. There's a drug out now that's a combination of three generics, and it's for heartburn. And those generics combined would be about $50 a month. The branded drug is about $2,100 a month. So that's why we need to have step therapy when cost is involved and all other things are equal. You know, our members and our, the employers of our members are the ones ultimately paying the bill. We have a great deal of discussion in this body about affordability of health care, and as you all know, we've had extensive discussion in the last year or so about affordability of prescription drugs. You know, step therapy protocols based on evidence are a very tried and true way to help ensure that people get access to treatments at the lowest cost possible so that they can get the treatments they need for their disease. Physicians who do their jobs and pay attention to their electronic prescribing systems that flag these things for them when there is going to be a prior authorization and send us information about their patients to appeal if they need to, should not have a problem with it. Most prescribers, my pharmacy people tell me, between 90 and 95% of prescribers follow all of our evidence-based formulary protocols. There are outliers who do not, and they are typically the ones who write angry letters instead of following a process. Those who follow a process don't have problems with their patients getting through our process. And we're here to serve our members and to help them get the treatments they need. With that, I'll be happy to take questions.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Betsy Earls representing Associated Oregon Industries and Oregon Business Association. As you know, the two associations are working on a merger, and so our policy positions are, for the most part, one and the same at this point in time. Our members, our employer members, work very hard to provide, to the extent that they can, good health care benefits because those help them attract and retain excellent employees, and it helps them take care of their workforce. And as everybody is keenly aware, the steadily rising cost of health care has made that really challenging. It's important to AOI and OBA to address in our policies, to the extent that we can, the drivers of health care cost. And one of the things that enables them to do that is employers want the people that manage their benefits to be guided by the evidence of effectiveness and to take reasonable opportunities to control costs without imposing unnecessary administrative hurdles on our employees who need to use those benefits. Employers hold their insurers and their TPAs accountable for this, and we shop, our members shop, for better services for their employees when we're not satisfied with the way our services are being managed. We're very concerned about Senate Bill 526 because we feel that it would unduly interfere with employers' ability to manage benefits, which is those things are effectively for effectiveness, safety, and cost. Step therapy has been one of the ways that our carriers help manage high-cost healthcare drivers. It's been around for many years, and it is a proven means to, when necessary, help direct people to the safest and lowest cost and effective treatments that are available. To the extent that they're able to do that, that helps our members keep their health benefit costs in line so that they're able to reward their employees in other ways and can you continue to reinvest in their businesses. Thank you.
Thank you. Elise.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Elise Brown for America's Health Insurance Plans. America's Health Insurance Plans is the national trade association of health plans across the country. And you've seen in front of you, you have written comments from one of our Oregon members, Pacific Source, and then you just heard a very thorough description of why the bill is a problem for us from my member, Tom Holt, with Cambia. And I, as the association representative, would only underscore the importance of the real issue here. If you pull the layers back, the real issue is the rising cost of prescription drugs, particularly those in the high-cost area and those we know, many new drugs that are in the pipeline. So just underscoring the need. Because of that, the cost management tools are so important for us to manage that and balance the cost so that our members truly benefit with the right drug at the best cost. So thank you. Happy to answer any questions.
Yes, Senator Beyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Tom, and I'm looking at this, and I must be missing something. As I read this, it doesn't eliminate an insurer's step therapy process. It just puts in place a timeline under which you would have to make a determination if the prescribing physician determined that it wasn't working. And it has some fairly specific steps of what they would have to demonstrate. And it seems to me, if you're looking at those, they're the kinds of things that you would say, yeah, you probably ought to try something else.
Chair Monis Anderson, Senator Beyer, the bill as it is written has such great specificity about requirements that it actually is an impediment to properly operating a step therapy protocol program. You know, for example, to call out the generic language in the bill, it says, well, you can require someone to use an AB rated generic that is exactly the same chemical compound as the branded product. Well, that's great for those, but it doesn't help us on those newer products that are simply a combination of a couple of old generics, because technically we wouldn't be allowed then to do that. The timelines are a problem. We deal with many, many claims every day, and we need to be able to prioritize those that are of greatest urgency. Sometimes we get a call for authorization of say, a complex surgery, and we need to put our medical staff on the phone with the practitioner immediately, so we could get penalized for doing the right thing for people who have more urgent circumstances the way this bill is written.
Any other comments? Okay, thank you very much. There's no one else signed up to testify. I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 526 and open a work session on Senate Bill 561. 561.
Madam Chair, we want the dash ones, right?
Yeah, do we want the dash ones?
Yeah. Madam Chair, I move the dash one amendment into Senate Bill 561.
First we should describe the bill. Yeah, sorry.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, before you, Senate Bill 561, brought to you by the Oregon Health and Science University. This measure was before you last week on February 16th. The measure permits students of dentistry and dental hygiene to perform under indirect supervision of OHSU dental faculty in specific community-based or clinical settings in Oregon. There is a dash one amendment. The amendment simply deletes the word direct and replaces it with indirect in the bill. There are no fiscal or expenditure impacts, and both of the expenditure impacts are on the list.
Okay, now.
Motion stands.
Okay, Senator Cruz moves to adopt the dash one amendments dated 2/13/17. Is there any discussion? Is there any objections? They are adopted.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 561 as amended by the dash one amendment to the 403 pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves Senate Bill 561 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Yes.
Aye.
Senator Snyder Hayward.
Excused.
Vice Chair Cruz.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries, and Senator Girard will carry the bill, and I will close the work session on Senate Bill 561 and open a work session on introduction of committee measures.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Just a few. Madam Chair, I move the following LCs be introduced as committee bills. LC 2442 dated 12/1/16, LC 3788 dated 2/16/17, LC 3987 dated 2/16/17, LC 4028 dated 2/16/17, LC 4149 dated 2/20/17, and LC 4194 dated 2/16/17.
Senator Cruz moves the following LCs be introduced as committee bills: LC 2442 dated 12/1/16, LC 3788 date dated 2/16/2017, LC 3987 dated 2/16/2017, LC 4028 dated 2/16/2017, LC 4149 dated 2/20/2017, and LC 4194 dated 2/16/2017. And do realize, members, that a vote for these measures in no way indicates that you will be voting for the bill if it ever comes before the committee or on the floor. Is there any discussion, any opposition? They are adopted. And any words for the good of the order? If Senator Steiner Hayward is listening, please get well. We want you back. With that, I am adjourning.
I guess the opposition is.